Chapter 5. In Mandalorian lore, the color blue represents reliability, green, duty, gold, vengeance, black, justice, gray, mourning a lost love, and red, honoring a father. Mandalorians, Identity and Language, published by the Galactic Institute of Anthropology. En route for the Hapes Cluster. "You sure this isn't a trap?" Ben asked.
"I told you Jason was nuts."
Shevu was heading for the Prolemian trade route in a small transport bearing the livery of the Geological Survey Team of the University of Coruscant. Ben felt confident about pulling off this ruse if they were questioned, because they really did look like a student and an earnest young lecturer in some arcane branch of the study of igneous rocks. Ben certainly wanted to look very closely at Cavan.
"But he had no way of knowing that I was going to do this before he told me to take a break."
"He had some other motive, though."
"Well, he didn't know we'd go to Cavan, and he won't know we've been."
"Who got you this crate?"
"Jason's ticked off a lot of people."
"Yes, I think he's off the party list at a lot of embassies now."
"If you have to know. A lot of the Corellians he rounded up were professors and students. The uni took it badly, and Barrett Psi comes in handy, with that engineering company of his dad's."
The name slapped Ben in the face. Barrett Psi. He was Corellian, from an ordinary working family who'd lived on Coruscant for generations. But he did something dumb with a blaster, talked tough about fighting the Galactic Alliance, and Ben had turned him in to Jason. When he vanished from GAG custody, like so many Corellians during those awful weeks, Ben had assumed the worst. A memory came back to him. Shevu hunched over a custody record, angry at losing prisoners from the list without proper procedure. "You found him?" Ben asked, as the memory resolved into realization.
"Yeah."
"And you got him out?" Ben floundered, dropped from a height into an ice-cold pool of doubt. "But he was armed and shooting at cops."
"Yeah, and you don't have to feel guilty about informing on him. The law's the law."
"But you bent it. You let Barrett go."
"Ben, everything Jason did to grab power was within the law. There's law, and there's justice, and sometimes they're not the same thing. Barrett was just a kid talking through his backside, like teenage lads do."
Ben's certainty wavered. He'd seen Barrett fire at the cops during a riot. He'd deflected the bolt. He wondered if he was clinging to that to make himself feel better about turning him in. "And you needed an informant."
"Don't you? Isn't that what I'll be doing for your dad?"
The adult world that Ben had been catapulted into had no safety net if anything went wrong. Nobody would call time on it like a training session, and the weapons weren't modified lightsabers designed just to sting. He'd woken up to that fast. He was playing by dirty, violent, grown-up rules. What still left him struggling, though, was the compromises, and he lay awake at night walking the endless maze of right and wrong, wondering if two wrongs could make a right, and if he might have learned that at the Jedi Academy. Dad always seemed to know what was right, even if he couldn't explain why. Ben realized at that moment that you never learned a foolproof formula for right and wrong, that there was no checklist of good and bad, and that you had to keep an eye on yourself every minute of the day and ask, "Should I be doing this? Would I want someone to do this to me?" "You don't have to spy for the Jedi Council," he said.
"Of course I do," Shevu said. "Who else is going to be able to get rid of a Sith?" You think the GA courts can bring the full majesty of galactic law down on his head? As long as we both know the score, that's fine.
Ben went back to his datapad, understanding how tense Shevu was. He could have told Tenelka what they were doing, but that would have meant official Hapen security involvement, and Shevu didn't trust anybody. Ben saw his point. He'd trusted Jason, after all. Now he was back in the land of hard evidence, running through all the data he'd gathered in a stunned haze while his mother lay dead in the tunnel on Cavan. She was, of course, in most of the Holovid recordings. Ben had watched those over and over until he could look past his mother's body and the pain of reliving the discovery. He saw instead the position of the body, the surrounding area, what material was dislodged or broken, the unoxidized bright color of the smashed bricks that told him the damage was new. He reconstructed a savage fight. So much destruction of the tunnel complex on that abandoned world that force use was obvious. There were no traces of detonite, the only other explanation for that much damage, and Mara Skywalker would never have had to use that much effort against a run-of-the-mill attacker. She'd fought someone at least as powerful as herself. Ben checked the profiles of the air samples he'd taken. There was the trace of high-energy vaporization from lightsabers and a lot of trace elements released by smashed brick, wood, and stone. He'd almost hoped for a whisper of the air from Jason's lungs, but the datapad-sized device couldn't do magic. What could he have missed? His mother's body had been examined thoroughly by Silgal. Other Jedi had combed the tunnels for evidence, picking up on all the possible clues that ordinary technology might have missed. But there was nothing discarded except the sterile pack of poison darts that were so like Kalima's weapons of choice, and the echoes of dark energy, which were equally likely to have come from Alima. But they hadn't picked up echoes of Alima herself. Was she adept enough to disguise her passage through Cavan? Jason certainly was. He could hide in the Force, and even cloak Lumia's presence right under the Jedi Council's nose. But it was still all what wasn't there at the scene, not what was. The Hapen deep space security sensors picked up the university transport as soon as it came within range, and the only thing that seemed to concern the control center was whether the survey was looking for gemstones. They seemed touchy about that. Shevu put on a very convincing, droning voice, explaining that gemstones weren't anywhere near as interesting as the Carlanian volcanic pipes and surrounding igneous rocks that would shed more light on the latest theory about the origins and formation of the Hapes Cluster. He was reading off a datapad. It did the trick. The control center stopped him midway through a riveting explanation of the outcropping of cylindrical diatremes and gave them clearance to land on Cavan. "I can do this." Ben concentrated on detached calm as the windswept surface of Cavan expanded rapidly beneath the vessel. "I can face this."
"You okay, Ben?"
"I'm fine."
"Think cop. Just keep thinking cop."
It was a lot less desolate than Ben recalled. The season had moved on, and the ground was covered in different plants, tussocks of tiny star-shaped red flowers with amber spikes for leaves. Shevu set the geosurvey droid to explore and drill some convincing core samples, just in case, and they walked the course. The CSF's slang for revisiting a crime scene and pacing out distances and angles in the hope of getting fresh insight. They stood at the location where Mara's Stealth X had been found, looking for inspiration.
"Jason must have landed here in his Stealth X," said Shevu. "His was signed out from the GAG hangar during the relevant time frame, and we know your mother called Hapen ATC to say she knew he was in the area. So unless he switched vessels, We're looking for traces of that special Tibana isotope.
Silgal's team did the sweep.
Ben had covered every angle. He was sure of that. But he wanted to be wrong and for an unforeseen forensic revelation to emerge.
Stealth-X's kicked so much of it around on takeoff that traces were spread over 500 meters. If Mom landed hers anywhere near Jason's, which is likely if she was going after him, then she wiped out his isotope footprint.
Just checking.
Let's do the tunnels.
It was the hardest thing of all, but Ben fought cop, as Chevu advised, and saw only what was in front of him, not what might have taken place there. Silgal had found traces of blood on rubble that had fallen from a collapsed ceiling, as if it had hit someone below, but it had been too degraded by the energy of blaster fire to identify its source. It might even have been his mother's. The sequence of events seemed clear, though. Someone, at least two people, had fought their way through the tunnels, causing huge damage. Some was blaster fire, and some showed no signs of its cause, which Ben guessed might have been massive force pushes.
It's you, Jason. I know it. We all know it. But I have to have hard evidence.
Chevu looked more and more exasperated as he re-scanned walls and floors, shaking his head as he looked at the readouts. The crime scene was months old.
"I think that's all we're going to get," said Ben. "Let's go."
"No, I'm not done," said Chevu.
"I'll try another route."
"You don't have to—"
"If I just wanted him for murder, I've already got a case with real live witnesses. Lieutenant Tebbutt, I'm doing this for you, Ben. You need to know for sure."
Did Mara Skywalker's death matter more than Patra Tebbutt's? It did to Ben, and he felt a little guilty about having so many resources to throw at his search for justice. He knew nothing about Tebbutt, whether she had a family and what they might be going through now, or even what story her next of kin had been told to explain her death. He reasoned that he was doing it for her, too, and all the beings who died because of Jason, even Boba Fett's daughter, criminal or not.
"I should have known what he was then. I should have known when I sat outside that interrogation room and heard Jason kill her."
"You're right," said Ben. "We keep going." They were back outside now. The sky was filling with clouds, threatening to spit light rain. Chevu went off to pace the distance from the Stealth X's last known location, seeing the terrain through Jason's eyes, he said, and Ben concentrated on his data pad again. It was hard to ignore the image of Mom. He thought of all the things he'd never had the chance to say to her, and magnified the picture so that the screen showed a close-up of her face. The injuries were fresh. If only she'd gouged a chunk out of Jason with her nails, then there'd have been tissue to match with his. But Silgal had said her wounds were peppered with dust, as if bricks had hit her in the face. As Ben gazed at her image, he could have sworn it shifted slightly, as if something was wrong with the data pad's display. The screen reflected a short-lived shaft of sunlight. Ben angled it slightly to see better. And then his mother's face on the screen really did move, reflected from behind him, and he gulped in a silent gasp of air as he spun around, and she was there. Right there, looking straight into his eyes. She was a touch away from him. She looked just as she had in life, but bathed in a haze of faint blue-white light like a faulty hologram. She smiled, a little sad frown of a smile, but a smile nonetheless, and buried the fingers of her right hand in her thick red hair to yank at it. Still smiling, she held out torn strands as if to drop them into his hands. Ben couldn't make a sound. He cupped his palm to catch the hairs, but nothing fell. And suddenly she was walking slowly away from him. He tried so hard to yell at her to stop, to wait, to talk to him, to come back, that he loved her so much. But she kept on walking, and all he could say was, "Love you." Then she turned, tugged at a lock of her hair, and he read her lips.
"Love you too, Ben."
And she was gone. Ben could hear only his hammering pulse now. His scalp felt stretched tight across his skull, and he couldn't move.
"Ben?" Shevu called. "Ben, are you okay?"
"Get a grip."
"Did you see anything?"
"You don't look so good."
"Did you see anything?"
"No. There's nothing here that I can see that was missed the first time. And if there was, it's weeks ago and it's gone."
He caught Ben's shoulders with both hands. "You look terrible.
Come on. Let's sit you down in the transport. Get your bearings again."
Ben knew that Shevu thought he was overcome by his memories. Shevu hadn't seen Mom, and Ben had no idea how to tell him that he had. Bereaved people saw their loved ones everywhere they looked when the loss was fresh, and that was probably the explanation. Except she'd looked at him, and her gestures had been so clear, and she'd spoken, even though he couldn't hear the sound. He didn't know much about force ghosts. Nobody did. But that weird bluish haze. If his brain had been playing tricks on him, he'd have seen her as he remembered her, not with stuff he didn't understand added to it all. "She came back. She came back to tell me. I'm fine," he said. He thought desperately. He had to grab this while it was still vivid and every detail was fresh. The hair. Why had she torn out hairs from her head? Why had she appeared to him here? Why here? Why not back on Endor or at home? If she could contact him like that, why didn't she just tell him Jason killed her? Did she even know who killed her? She could have been ambushed. And then why didn't she know now, now that she was one with the Force? But Ben stopped there. He was off chasing the nebulous world of ghosts when he needed evidence in the mundane world to show everyone.
"Ben, I've got a flask of Caff. Nice hot cup will make you feel better."
"Why here?"
"Because we're doing an investigation."
She was telling him hair was significant.
"Lon," he said, "when people fight, they leave all kinds of traces on each other, don't they?"
"Yes, but it's too late to ask for swabs from Jason. And do Jedi actually land punches?"
"No, but..."
"Stang!"
Shevu was furious. Something had occurred to him, and he was angry with someone, or maybe even himself.
"Stang, the Stealth X. We didn't test the Stealth X. In CSF, we'd normally go over that with a fine-tooth comb, as a matter of course."
"Nobody thought it was Jason at the time. Nobody thought that there might have been anything to look for anyway, because we don't fight like non-force users. And
what would we be looking for?" Shevu asked. "Come on, Ben. What's on your mind?"
Ben swallowed.
"Hair. Mom's hair."
"Could she ever have flown in Jason's Stealth X? If we find anything, is there any other way it could have ended up there, apart from being transferred on his clothing? I know she came to see him at GAGHQ, but did they have any contact outside work that would have led to transfer?"
"Not that I know."
"Then we've got to go for that, Ben."
"How are we going to get a chance to go over the thing? And he's had weeks to clean the cockpit."
"We'll think of something."
Shevu looked torn between staying and doing more searching while they had the light and heading back home.
"If we come up empty, fine.
but I'm not leaving that stone unturned. Come on.
They retrieved the droid and took off toward the hyperspace lane. 100 times on the journey back, Ben shut his eyes to replay that memory of his mother and saw her lips moving.
Love you too, Ben.
Two. She'd heard him. She'd heard, seen, sensed, whatever, but she knew he'd said he loved her. He burst into tears and sobbed until his abdominal muscles ached.
Sorry, he said at last, wiping his face on his sleeve. I'm a bit crazy.
Your mother was murdered, Shevu said quietly. You're entitled to go as crazy as you like. Ben wondered whether to tell Shevu about the apparition, but thought better of it. Later, maybe. He might not even tell his dad for a while. He didn't know how. But he'd call him and let him know where he was as soon as they dropped back out of hyperspace. He missed Luke, and couldn't imagine why he'd spent so much effort in the past trying to escape his attention. He cherished every second with him now.
The dead talk, Ben, Shevu said. They bear witness.
Yes, said Ben. They do.
Bevin Vassar Farm, outside Keldabe. Dr. Bellwine gave Sintas another shot of tranquilizer and checked her pulse. This time she didn't lash out.
I wouldn't usually administer this, he said, but she'll injure herself knocking into things if she isn't sedated.
Fett saw the open maw of the sarlacc a split second before he plunged into the lightless, hopeless pit of acid.
Thanks, Solo. They do say.
Stop talking about me as if I'm dead, Sintas snapped. Everything's so loud. Where am I? Why can't I see?
She looked dazed now, but it was an improvement on stumbling around the room. She sounded sane enough, too, but sanity was a fragile thing, and Fett knew the odds. It was 50-50 that she'd ever be completely normal again. He didn't know where to start explaining, and even Myrta, who usually had all the smart answers, erred on the side of extreme caution. Sintas sat on the bed, hugging her knees, blind gaze wandering unsteadily between voices. How did you tell a woman she'd been frozen down for 30-odd years, and that while she was busy being unconscious, her daughter had gone after her ex-husband, bent on deadly revenge, and then that daughter had been picked up by the secret police and tortured to death, and that she had a granddaughter, and Fett had rehearsed it in his mind. Stang. It sounded just as bad now as it had 3 months ago. Worse, maybe. If she remembered that all on her own, it was going to be bad enough. Medrit, to his credit, did what Bevin would have done had he not been out chasing another potential problem. He saved his Mandalore from embarrassment and handled the diplomacy.
"You're Sintas Vel,"
Medrit said quietly. She seemed very sensitive to noise. It was just as well she was blind, though. Had she seen Medrit, a pillar of muscle with a frown that announced his short temper, she wouldn't have felt reassured.
"You've been encased in carbonite for a while. You know what that is?"
Of course I do.
Okay. You're in Keldabe, on Mandalore. I'm Medrit Vassar. This is my farm, and you can stay here until you're well enough to leave. What's the last thing you can remember?
Sintas stared straight ahead, sightless. She kept rubbing her eyes in evident frustration. Sedated or not.
Where's my necklace?
can you remember a necklace, madam?
Belwine asked.
I had a necklace. Where is it?
Belwine turned to Fett.
Did she?
Yes,
Fett said.
She did.
It's very encouraging that she recalls it.
Fett looked at Myrta. Their eyes locked, and she reached inside her collar to take off the Heart of Fire, or at least the half of it that wasn't buried with Aelin. He'd given it to Sintas as a marriage gift when they were both too young to know any better. But that wasn't what made his gut tighten now. Sintas was from Khifu. The gem, one of the rarer gold ones, shot with inner light in a rainbow of colors, was said to hold part of the soul of the giver and the receiver. Kifar could sense the memories stored in the stones, as if it were a data crystal, but with the added layer, the added unasked-for complications, Fett thought, of the emotional elements. Even if she was crazy or blind, that stone might just speak to Sintas and jog her memory far too fast for his liking. He was a man who said only what he had to say, which wasn't usually a great deal. But this was different.
Who am I more worried about, Sintas or Myrta?
Neither woman had the full picture of the mess their family was. Yet. Belwine, who didn't impress Fett half as much as the local farm vet who'd treated him, made a valiant attempt to earn his fee. He pulled up a chair beside the bed and spoke to Sintas in his best bedside manner.
Do you recall being in Carbonite, my dear? Were you conscious?
Sintas jerked her head as she heard the med droid enter.
Nothing. I don't remember a thing. And you can keep that droid away from me, too.
Myrta dangled the Heart of Fire from its leather cord wrapped around her forefinger. She gave Fett a meaningful look.
Now or never, Babuir,
and approached Sintas cautiously.
Here's your necklace,
she said. She wrapped her grandmother's hand around the stone, folding her fingers gently.
I kept it safe for you. My name's Myrta Gev. We never met, but I'm a relative of yours.
Sintas froze for a moment, almost massaging the Heart of Fire in her hand, gaze fixed.
It's not the way I remember it.
Fett detached at that point. He'd learned to do it in the days after his father was killed, a trick of flipping a switch between emotions rubbed raw and complete numbness. He found he could do it with physical pain, too. Anyone could learn to do it if they wanted to escape pain badly enough.
We had to break it, he said. You can get another one.
Sintas turned her head slowly toward him, and for a moment he expected her to recognize his voice. She certainly looked as if she was pondering something, but she lowered her head and seemed to be focused on the Heart of Fire. Myrta just sat there on the edge of the bed with her shoulder touching her grandmother's, her face set in that grim way she had when she was determined not to let him see how upset she was.
And do I know you?
Sintas asked. Belwine leaned close to Fett.
It might be too much too soon. The case studies I've read say that excessively rapid exposure to their real situation can cause carbonite patients to go into a catatonic state.
Fett got the picture. He grabbed the excuse.
A long time ago, Sintas, he said.
The name felt alien in his mouth. He didn't dare use his pet name for her, Sin.
She'd called him Beau. Those were relics of a brief, happy time. Get some rest. He paused to stare at her for a few more minutes, wondering what had happened to his own life in the intervening years while she'd slept, and then there was the sound of doors opening. Fett stepped out into the passage and shut the door. The kids squealed in a nearby room.
Babuir, the lady's awake! She's crazy, and she can't see!
Kuur!
Medrit's voice was barely audible. He made a shushing sound.
That's not nice, Breela. She's not well. That's the Mandalore's wife.
But he's so old, and she's beautiful.
Like the irony hadn't occurred to me.
Fett strode into the room, once again impervious to any opinions but his father's. That had always been the only constant in his life, the self-esteem and sense of being loved that his father had given him. Everything else was too fragile. Even the sea eel that Fett kept as a pet on Kamino. That poor creature hadn't escaped his taint either. He loved it in the way that small boys loved unlikely animals. And when he had to leave Tipica City with his father for the last time, he let it free in the ocean. It was eaten by a predatory fish before his eyes, in seconds, before it had even tasted freedom. Everything he'd ever loved got taken from him somehow, or was subject to some unknown curse that said Fett was better off alone, for everyone's sake.
Kids,
Medrit said. Fett studied his gloves.
They say I was one once.
Goron just calmed to say he's down at the Oyubat. And you're not going to believe what showed up in the X-Wing.
What?
A Jedi. He thinks it's Jaina Solo. He remembers the holo images that Sal Solo was flashing around when he put the contract out on the Solos.
Well, well.
She wants to see you.
Did she bring her credit account?
Fett was almost grateful for the interruption. This was work. He could handle that a lot better than what was going on in that room.
I said I'd sell the Besulik to her scumbag brother in person, or not at all. But let's see what she's offering.
So how's it going with Sintas?
Myrta gave her the Heart of Fire. That's keeping her occupied.
Belwine's a waste of credits, by the way.
Not too many doctors see carbonite cases these days.
I meant that he hasn't asked what happened about your terminal illness, especially after being summoned to Kamino about it.
He can see I'm still breathing.
I let Haysha Maket know that she might be needed then.
Fett let the amusement of the tough Nerf doctor lift his spirits a little.
Let's see what the Jedi wants, and give her 10 bonus points for having the gall to come here.
Oyubat Tapkaf, Keldabe. It was the last place in the galaxy that Jaina had expected to run into another Jedi, and she definitely hadn't expected to meet one who would pull a blaster on her either. But she was staring a blaster in the muzzle right now.
You can talk your way out of this. You have to.
I'm right, aren't I? Said the old man. You're a Jedi.
She wasn't imagining it. The old man made a big, disciplined impression in the Force, as if he'd been trained. The other man in the multicolored armor, now that was harder to pin down, but she was sure he was Force-sensitive. It was like hearing an accent that anyone from out of town wouldn't catch.
The crowd in the tap calf had suddenly lost interest in the bolo ball, and every single one of them had drawn at least one blaster on her. Some had two.
"Where's her lightsaber?"
asked the vine-tattooed man.
"She's not carrying it."
The old Mandalorian didn't even blink. His eyes, pink-rimmed, watery, a faded light color that might once have been green or hazel, were fixed on hers, boring into her in the way that only another Jedi could. He took half a pace forward, not quite so frail and grandfatherly now.
"I had a very strong feeling you'd arrived."
"I'm Jaina Solo,"
she said at last. A Jedi name used to be enough to make doors open back at the Corps. It closed them here.
"And I've come to ask Fett to help me."
She could have sliced the silence with a vibroblade. She'd expected derisive laughter. Bevine just watched with the mild annoyance he might reserve for a kid. She could feel it.
"Didn't we save your papa's shebs at Kalula Station?" asked the tattooed man. "Ask him if he remembers the funny folks in armor who were killing the Vongees for him. It might jog his memory. And tell him Carid sends his best."
"I apologize for sneaking in," Jaina said.
She was now totally reliant on powers she hadn't used or trained, ones she'd seen her mother use so often with not a force trick in sight. Diplomacy and persuasion. It was much harder than it looked.
"But how far would I have got past your ATC if I'd announced who and what I was? I really need Fett's help."
"Give her some credit for coming here unarmed, at least." The man in the motley armor took off his helmet, a blood-red and gray thing that didn't match another plate on him. He was in his 50s, with very dark eyes and gray-streaked black hair.
"I'm Venku, also known as Kataka."
He looked at the old man with a distracted fondness. "My respected Oribuir here is Gotob."
"Well, so we all know what we are.
We're Mandalorians, Jedi Solo," said Venku. "What did you think we were?" It struck Jaina that maybe the rest of Keldabe didn't know these men were Force-sensitive. Given the enmity between Jedi and Mandalorians, maybe they were undercover, or stranded here, or... No, she couldn't come up with a plausible explanation. She couldn't imagine any Jedi being out of the loop for so long that she didn't know of them. But there was always the possibility that they weren't Jedi, and just Force-sensitives. But the old man radiated trained powers, and a sense of healing, of reconciliation, of all kinds of soothing things that didn't go with the blaster or his hostile expression. He wasn't a random genetic event.
"You're not here to ask too many questions. You're here to learn from Fett."
If Jaina kept testing that Force presence, however carefully, these men might feel threatened. If they were living here as Mandalorians, nobody here was treating them as if they were strangers, she noted. Chances were that they wanted to keep a low profile.
"Oh, no. Tell me they're not Sith. Mandalorians always fought for the Sith in the past, didn't they? Fett was Vader's hired help, too. We can't escape each other."
But she was sure she'd have felt dark energy around them had they been Sith. She'd had way too much practice at feeling Sith and dark Jedi in the Force these past months to make that mistake.
"I might need their help as Force users. Don't push it."
"Doesn't matter," Jaina said at last. "My mother came here during the Empire's occupation. She met your leader at the time. In fact, she...
We're doing a lot better than we were in your mother's day. No thanks to the New Republic. Or the GA. Have you come to negotiate some arms deal?
Ouch. They hadn't forgotten the Yuuzhan Vong War then. Had anybody?
In a way, I suppose I have.
Fett's on his way, said Bevin. And most deals are negotiable.
Gotob, apparently satisfied that there were enough blasters trained on Jaina to allow him to rest, slid his weapon back in his belt and replaced his helmet.
We'll be going, Venku said. Bevin, if you need anything, call.
Bevin's expression said that he was freshly puzzled.
How come you spotted her before me? I had Sal Solo's ID images.
Maybe you weren't the only one here who was offered the contract on the Solos.
Jaina reminded herself that she didn't just have a troublesome brother. She'd had a pretty toxic uncle, too, and Fett had helped dispose of him. And Venku obviously didn't want to reveal that he was Force-sensitive.
Lovely, she said,
letting her Leia state of mind slip for a moment as she watched the two Force-sensitives leave.
I'll take it as a good sign that none of you came after us.
Only Fett's daughter, Bevin said quietly. And for her, Han Solo was just bait for her father.
Jaina made an effort to imagine her grief over Aunt Mara transferred to Fett, and what state of mind he might be in now. But where was he? How come the Mandalore, the ruler, didn't have some official residence where she had to seek audience with him? They were meeting in a shabby cantina. She leaned her back against the bar and thought better of trying to make small talk with Bevin, who was managing both to keep her in his field of vision and yet not to meet her eye. Eventually, patrons holstered their blasters and went back to their ale, muttering about missing the end of the bolo ball match thanks to a Shabla Jedi.
In basic, so that I know I've ticked them off. Good start.
Then the doors opened, and a man in dull green armor and a tattered cloak stood in the entrance. Her impression in the Force was one of a lonely man resigned to being that way. Was this Fett? His armor fitted the description, but she'd seen plenty of green armor plates in the last hour or so, every shade from pale waranut to the deepest forest. A few of the cantina crowd glanced at the man for a moment, as if they were just checking who had come in, but they went back to the holonet screen in what looked like the post-match dissection in their own language. It probably wasn't Fett then. She'd expected him to be huge, monstrous, iconic, but this man was of average build, and apart from his very confident walk, not a swagger, just a sense that he answered to nobody, there was nothing she'd have stopped to check out twice. He came to a halt a meter in front of her and hooked one thumb in his belt, his other hand steadying an EE-3 blaster that hung from a shoulder sling. Then she spotted the Wookiee scalps. Oh, it was him.
You wanted to see me, Jedi?
Fett?
There have been imposters, but I think I got them all. Let me know if I missed any.
I'm Jaina Solo.
We know.
He tilted his head a fraction.
You look like your mother.
Jaina, used to the protocol and twittering, fawning entourages of world leaders on a dozen planets, wasn't ready for a warlord who walked around unescorted and whose people could ignore him in favor of a bolo ball game if they felt like it. Either Fett had the casual confidence that stemmed from huge power, or he was of no importance to them. She'd have bet all her credits on the former. Fett just stood there, waiting. Dad was right. Not being able to see his eyes behind that visor was unsettling.
"You saved my father a couple of times," Jaina said. "I ought to thank you."
"I handed him over to Jabba, too. But I did time in the Sarlacc, thanks to him. So we're even. What do you want from me?"
Jaina felt the ice thinning under her. She swore she heard it crack. She had to play this carefully.
"It's my brother, Jason."
"The cowardly Barv who killed my daughter?"
"I'm afraid so. I'm sorry."
Fett's voice was all passionless gravel, with not a spare syllable that didn't have to be there.
"So he wants to buy some Mondo technology?"
"No," said Jaina. "I want you to teach me how to capture him and stop him destroying the galaxy."
She paused.
"Please."
Fett didn't reply. He wasn't exactly a chatty man, but there was keeping one's counsel, and then there was stunned silence. And Jaina knew which she was listening to now. In the Force, Fett felt like a sudden torrent of icy water. She had his attention then. Now she needed his agreement.